Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Yawning this morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Wednesday, the 23rd of November, which means we are having another on-the-clock Guardian Radio AM mashup. Good morning, Mr. Newry.
This morning, see, I'm able to use your phrase early this morning. I'm excited, actually. The topic today is peculiar to me, and I'm basically sitting there to see how you're going to guide me through it.
Oh, no, sir.
No?
Oh, no, sir.
I can't be quiet through this one?
Through the fire. In fact, on this one in particular, right, very, very interested in your perspective, right, on what we're talking about, what we're going to be talking about this morning. Very, very interested in your. So I don't expect you to sit back at all.
Okay. All right. I shall watch and see. Go ahead.
Absolutely. We have guests in studio joining us. Remember, on Wednesday, we try to line up a panel for a discussion. And joining us this morning is one of Mr. Newry's regular co-hosts, Ms. Catherine Chisnell-Mitchell.
Good morning. Yes. Happy to be here, Eric. I love your show and I love you. So happy to be here with you.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. And joining us as well is Ms. Natalie Maolis.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good addition. Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, Bahamas.
How are you?
Sprightly, despite the lack of coffee, surprisingly. And despite
and not pulling your mic up a little more, yeah, please.
And despite a two-month newborn.
Yes, I brought Natalie out of maternity leave to be here. Because so, I thought she'd be a good voice on this panel today. I think she's a great young Bahamian female voice that we'd like to have on this.
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, I've been trying to get you on my show for a hot minute. You think it's to talk about the awesome work that you've been doing around the Bahamas. But no, my friend, I want you on my show to challenge. Ms. Maolis is also a part of a very successful business.
The iconic
family,
business.
And a part of that success is the creativity, right, and how that's applied to what it is that they do. So I really wanted her to come on here to challenge today. I have a new product, and she always have a product with her. Yesterday we were talking with the diabetes community about healthy living and wellness. And my friend here come from the Neem family of the Bahamas, right? Like, I'm from the Chicchani family of the Bahamas. And Ms. Maolis is from the Neem family of the Bahamas.
Oh, that means she Abaco then.
Monarchy.
Hail from the great island of Abaco.
Yeah.
And Abaco Neem.
There you go.
Abaco
is also the home of perhaps the stealthiest and strongest Bahamian mosquito in the archipelago.
I think Andros might argue with you on that.
Andros has the heavyweight.
I came across some mosquitoes in Cat Island to push you over.
Listen, I take
your bed out on the beach, right?
Yeah.
We heard that story.
I was in Current one time at a beach picnic, and the mosquitoes tried to pick up the bus.
Yep.
But still, I think Abaco have it, because Abaco mosquitoes is race horses.
Oh.
That's where they get their training from.
Barry Islands. It's tough competition. Yep.
This week, we are approaching what we call National Women's Week, right?
Yes.
And on the
26th
of November, which is a Sunday, I think, 26th, yep, no, 26th is Saturday. That is the Bahamian anniversary of women's suffrage, right?
Yes, yes.
And so we'll be celebrating
the 60th anniversary of women's right to vote, yes.
Right, and so I thought this is going to be a great mashup, right? I got a young Bahamian woman scientist and conservationist. She's also an entrepreneur and creative, in that sense. And she is a Greek Bahamian, right? And I think, look, all of these cross-sections, what a great addition to a conversation about women's suffrage and the status of women 60 plus years mm-hmm. after getting the vote, mm-hmm. one of the most important sort of political mechanisms in the country. And so, Cecil, you got to be here because we also need man's input.
Yeah.
Can't have this conversation without the voices of men. Often we think that there's a complete and utter separation between the feminine and the masculine, and that is not true. The world cannot exist without both, and we have to acknowledge that. Okay, and so as we get started, today is the 23rd of November. At 9 a.m. this morning, the Ministry of Social Services and Urban Development, in conjunction, I think, with Zonta and a number of women's organizations, began a parliamentarian pinning ceremony. And I hope they pin all of the women's duties on the male parliamentarians and tell them, go home for a minute. And not that house, go to the other house. And get, anyway, I'm only joking, but I think it's a program in solidarity, right? Mm-hmm. The parliamentarians are expressing their solidarity with the movement to work towards eradicating violence against women and girls.
Right.
Right, and that's mm-hmm. an important thing. All of us should be committed
essential,
to
not important. Yeah. Essential for the progress of our country.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because when women and girls can exist and live safely, then our communities are safer, mm-hmm. our homes are safer, yeah. and our country is stronger. All right, so on the 25th of November is the International Day to End Violence Against Women, right? Mm-hmm. And so starting on the 25th is this thing we call 16 days of activism. And we've got 16 days of internationally recognized days and activities, all focusing on awareness, prevention, and treatment for victims of violence and all in between. So the 25th of November, remember, that's Friday, that's International Day to End Violence Against Women. 16 days of activism ends on the 10th of December, which is Human Rights Day. And so on Saturday, the 26th, here's one of the activities taking place locally. Equality Bahamas is hosting a CEDAW Convention Speaker Series. That's mm-hmm. the CEDAW Convention Speaker Series at 10 a.m. If you want to register, you go to tiny.cc/CEDAW9. tiny.cc/CEDAW9. And our speaker will be Aruna Narain. She's the vice chair and rapporteur of the CEDAW committee. That means she's in charge of the minutes. You know, that's the most important position on a committee, except for refreshments. And she will lead a conversation on CEDAW Article 9, which is nationality. And they'll talk about the interpretation of the article, its importance in the Bahamas post-2016 referendum, recommendations made to the Bahamas in 2018, mm-hmm. and progress towards compliance with CEDAW. Exciting event, and I think people should tune in. You should definitely tune in. Now, Ms. Maolis, we're going to get to you because you have been doing something fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I ain't just talking about spiny lobster research. This is the woman who's making sure that we understand the lobster's feelings, so we don't hurt their feelings and they run away and don't cross the the ocean floor back to us again. But I got a bunch of questions about the status of women. I want to throw them out there. Now, I'm throwing them out there. We don't have to answer them in any particular order. I want the audience to hear them. Give the audience an opportunity. They may feel compelled to call in as well. Mr. Newry, usually I wait till the end of the show to throw out the questions. I can start at the beginning, right?
Before I even do that, I know that there's supposed to be a bio on Ms. Maolis so we can understand
what she does.
Of course, Catherine, you're going to do it since she's kin to you. But I'm just learning that this is the Red Lobster lady. And so I want to know more about that. Because
the titles
Red,
just keep getting better.
Yeah. These, yes. So after Catherine do her intro, I'm going to ask, what would she know about Red Lobster?
Okay.
Because the wife's
like,
every
Bahamian wants to know that. They're like, let's go on to Florida. Let's boost the American economy and let's get us some red lobster. But I have to say, everyone knows that I am such a fangirl when it comes to our Bahamian athletes. I will pull on the side of the road and crash the car when I see the Golden Knights at the gas station. My husband has been embarrassed by me in public when I see Shawnee in an airport so many times that my children will try to block my view because they know I'm going to be embarrassing. But Natalie, to me, is one of those Bahamian heroes of an athletics, of athletic gold medal glory in a different kind of industry for women, especially hot young women like her, which is in the STEM area, which we need role models for. But Natalie has been working as the fisheries expert for the Nature Conservancy now for how many years? And has recently this year been nominated for the iconic, prestigious EC50, the top 50 explorers of the world that the Forbes Explorers Club says that people need to know about. The people that have been inducted into these clubs since 1904, I think, have been the first people to go to the North and South Poles, the first people on the moon, people like Jane Goodall. And Natalie has been globally recognized from hundreds and hundreds of people put forward as a young Bahamian that has been an oceans and fisheries advocate. And what makes her really controversial and fabulous is that she's a friend to the fishermen. This lady is not here to protect the environment at the expense of our humankind, but she wants the environmental community to coexist profitably and peacefully with the human community so that we can continue to make the best of that which is the wealth of our country, which is our waters, our fisheries, our the industry that can come from it and must come from it if we can see the rising food costs. She also has her master's in economics and international food and science resources from the University of Florida. So at this time, when we go to the food store and see $16.99 a head for cauliflower and weep at how much eggs cost, she is someone who's making sure we can feed ourselves as a nation and continue to care for our environment and our people in a way that's sustainable. I love her so much. I'm excited.
Oh, too much, yeah. Catherine. Too much. Too kind. Thank you for that introduction.
I'm just now showing like she's nationally significant. I mean, important.
Internationally significant.
Yeah. So go ahead, Erin. Let's just start this conversation. I want to know how you are involved with Red Lobster. So that's where I'm going to start at.
I don't have the recipe for the cheddar biscuits.
No.
I just want to make that clear.
Yeah. So I'm grateful for your contribution towards that. But I yield to you, Erin. Go ahead.
Absolutely. No. Well, in fact, what I want to do is just sort of throw the questions out there and then get back to Ms. Malis, give the audience a little time to think about them. Because I have some questions for her as well. The first question, of course, is what does a fisheries specialist do? Because listen, I thought I was a fish specialist, right? I like lionfish.
You like to eat the fish.
I can be honest with you, I like to trim the fish too. Somehow, like wrangling a lionfish, right? And the bomb is the only place you could really do it. And wrangle it. I like it. What does a fisheries specialist do?
Well, with my role with the Nature Conservancy is predominantly project management of our sustainable fisheries projects in the country. And through the Nature Conservancy and working with ocean conservation, the Nature Conservancy, as Catherine said, looks at a place where both people and nature thrive. So we look and make sure that our fisheries are managed for the ecology and health of our oceans, but all at the same while, we're always looking at and taking into consideration the people aspect, our communities, our livelihoods, to making sure that our management is realistic, can be implemented, and benefits both people and nature.
All right. Now, like, how do you prepare for this job, right? Like, what degree do you get? Where do I need to intern? Do I need to intern on Potoski Dock? Right?
Yes, you need to be on Potter's Key Dock because that's where the people are. That's where our fishermen are. And those are the people that are out in the boat every day. Mm-hmm. And so to listen to them and learn from them, that's the best education that you can get if you want to call yourself, unquote, unquote, fisheries specialist. Is to listen to the people in the communities.
Absolutely. In fact, when we were doing our lionfish research for our program, for our awareness and culture building program, we learned more about lionfish on the dock, on the ramp, talking to fishermen, talking to people who have experienced the lionfish in the water, and then learned that there's an Atlantic lionfish and there's an Indo-Pacific lionfish, because divers have been seeing lionfish in smaller numbers long before the invasion from the South Pacific, right? From that side of the world. It's just fascinating.
Well, we don't know. Well, they could have been seeing them for years, right? It just takes time to record and document. So, I wouldn't say it was necessarily its own population. But I just want to clarify: I am not a scientist. I do not have a PhD. I have a Master's of Science in Economics and Fisheries. I just want to clarify that. But I believe in working with our scientists and our researchers to have the best data possible in making those management decisions for our country. So I just want to clarify that.
It leads to my question. So economics and fisheries, so you basically find out ideas on how to make money from fishing?
Well, when you are looking at proper management of your resource, you want to find that perfect point, right? And there's a bunch of scientific terms that I could throw out for that. But that perfect point is, how can we ensure that our communities can make a livelihood from the species, but at the same time, we protect that population?
How do we make sure we have conch fritters on the table in 50 years and years to come, right?
And there's that sweet spot, and that's what management is always trying to make sure that we can do for the future.
So what about the sharks? Because right now we have shark attacking people, and I'm not sure we had. You want to talk about the sharks?
No, the sharks attacking people.
We had to talk about the sharks.
Right?
I don't see how we can make money of killing them.
I just want to know where these incidents happening, because if they're happening in the water, I don't think attack is really the right word. Like if a shark.
What do you call it?
Listen, if
I'm swimming in,
if I'm on the gas station at the marina, right?
Yeah.
And a shark come and rob me in the gas station, then I've been attacked. Uh-huh. If I in the ocean,
swimming,
and meet the shark there, the ocean that God put the sharks in.
For us to fish and eat.
Point of information here, Natalie's brother-in-law, Paul, was the one you had your shark show with. She is married to a charter fisherman and has all her brother-in-laws are fishermen, so she has an invested interest in this. And her mother-in-law, Alexandra Millicent, was the first restaurant in the Bahamas, August Moon, to serve lionfish on the menu. So she has a real invested lifestyle in the work that she does. So this is not just talk that we're trying to keep conch fritters on the table at our Thanksgiving in 50 years, which is not a Bahamian holiday, but anyway. So, yeah, carry on. We can go back on the shark run today. Can we do that? Do we have time for that?
I want to know, how do we manage sharks?
Well, listen, that's your perspective. My perspective is this, is that it is an important conversation. I appreciate why he raised it. I was about to ask the same question. I was going to ask, are there people who are focused on that particular discussion with the shark? But what's more interesting to me is, if a gendered approach, right? Are women researchers approaching the conversation about sharks and sustainability differently from men, right? Are women, female fishermen, researchers, right? Ocean stakeholders, people who are working with the ocean, do women have a different perspective on shark management that men do, right? Do women have a different perspective on conservation, exploitation, and protection of natural resources than men do? But only because for this particular conversation, right, the perspective that I raised just now, I mean, Cecil said it, looking at these sharks biting people, and I just want to know, are they biting people in the water? Because that's what sharks tend to do in the water, and if women doing this work have a different perspective, right? I'm going to tell you, I can't get mad at a shark that is biting people in the water. That's what sharks do. I can't get mad with a shark that's competing with fishermen for fish stocks because that's what sharks do. But I could get upset at humans that feel that they somehow need to cull this population because they can't handle them. Now, if you tell me, we need to cull the population because the numbers in the water, historic data shows us that when shark populations reach this number, then we see a significant drop in lobster stock, we see a significant drop in snapper stock, right? Or my favorite, turbot. You see a significant drop in turbot stock and we got to do something. But if it's just because fishermen are having a difficult time, I don't think that warrants a culling exercise. I don't think it warrants a shift in the law to allow allow the killing of sharks. And so I just wondered, is there a different perspective? Because Cecil and I were both going at the same question.
Yeah.
And then I realized we were coming at it from totally different perspectives.
Well, I think your question about women's perspectives, I think that I just want to shout out to Dr. Krista Sherman at the Perry Institute of Marine Research. She's an excellent Bahamian researcher and scientist who studies fisheries, fishing stocks in our country. And so there are women that are involved in research in this country. But I think your question of are women involved, yes, they're involved. But I think it poses a larger conversation about women and part of making decisions on a larger basis in this country. Because you need to have the women and the male perspective. That's what gives us the most fullest, complete picture. Okay, we need those two different ways of thinking. We need that. That's how you get rich information, right? Mm-hmm. But that can be said across many things. That's why it's important to involve local communities. It's important to involve the fishers. It's important to bring the scientists and the fishers and the local communities and the women together, because you have real, information, and you can really make change when you bring those different perspectives together instead of just having one perspective. Mm-hmm. So it should always be done, always.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think perhaps that may be a gendered approach to conservation, right? That we're not just looking at fishermen. We're not just talking to fishermen to make a decision about sharks, right? We're not just talking to a long trip, 3-week, 4-week fishermen. We're not just talking to 1-day, 2-day fishermen. We're not just talking to scientists. We are having a holistic conversation with all the stakeholders to come to.
And I think if we're looking at women leadership, especially in this field in the country, we have Lakeisha Anderson, the new executive director of the Bahamas National Trust. Mm-hmm. She's a woman. Marcia Musgrove, the new director of the Nature Conservancy Bahamas. We have great Bahamian women.
Kasherina McKinney
of Brief. We have great women leadership and voices in the field. And even from the fisheries perspective, if you go to East San Grand Bahama, most of the fishers actually on Sweeting's Key, there is a mix of men and women, single mothers, that is how they provide for their families is fishing. They go out in their boat, that's how they're feeding their children. So it's not, everyone thinks of it as it's a male-dominated field or sector, but there are real women that go out in their little boat, and that is how they feed their children at the end of the day. And if they're not the ones catching it, who are the women cooking it in the kitchens? Who are the women that are in the restaurants that depend on this research to run their restaurants and keep their communities going? It's the women. So the women are vital to our sector and in many different ways, more than just going and catching it.
And any society that fails to harness the energy, the creativity, I'll add the intelligence of its women, is at a disadvantage in the modern world, is one of the quotes linked to International Women's Week. That if we have these minds, these views, these perspectives, as you said, in a male-dominated science-based world, that it's primarily male traditionally, to have these new perspectives that look at things in a fresh way, and it has to be something that is only helpful to us, that is only helps the whole view, as you said.
All right, so look, where can we learn more about your work? Like, where can I go to find research on spiny lobster? I saw a story, an interview, right, on, I think it is World Ocean Day 2021. There's an interview with you. Where can we find more work, writing, thoughts around ocean conservation and fisheries conservation?
Sure. You can go on to, actually, if you go on to Briefs, Brief has an excellent website. They have great information on what's happening in the Bahamas. If you go on to the Perry Institute of Marine Science, Bahamas National Trust, even the Nature Conservancy's website, you can find information.
Okay, and who's hiding the information about the merman and the merking? Who have
that's
the information
all to be
about
found?
The mermaids?
No, that's all to be found in Mr. Nuri's poetry. If you want to see the mythology, the Chicharniism, it all can be read there.
Listen, there's no mythology, okay? The Chicharni origin story is true. And you know how I know it's true?
Because in the bush at night, you'll see them.
No, because both the merking and the merqueen have equal power.
Well,
my
daughter would agree.
That's how I know it's true. There's a gender parity and a gender equality in the Chicharni origin story. And the Merking and the Merqueen have equal power. And that's how I know the story is real about your mythology. I just want to know who else have the research.
My daughter would agree with you.
Yeah,
she is a fervent believer in the mermaid
existence. She's smart.
Existence.
Listen, y'all She chisels. You're smart.
She's a Mitchell.
Isa Mitchell too.
We're cousins. But when I just have to comment. We're talking about creative. When I saw that quote attached to International Women's Week, both you and Aaron have known each other from time. But when it comes to creativity, energy, and intelligence, and just like the hustle of bringing the ideas of women to the forefront, to the table, whether you're peddling it or whether you're proselytizing it, both of you are outstanding women in that area. So thank you.
Ah, you're welcome. Yes. Cecil, I just realized we had a couple texts here.
Go ahead.
I know I can let you read them. Maybe I shouldn't read the guys, just read anything. Yeah. Maybe I let you read them.
Do we have the number if anyone wants to call in?
Oh, absolutely. So to call in, to join the conversation, I was gonna leave the grilling to me and Cecil. Telephone lines 323-6232, 325-4316, and 325-4259. Now that we've given out the numbers, right, let me tell you what we're talking about. So let me throw the questions out, and then we're going to get to them in any particular order. So the first question I wanted to put to this panel today in the wake of, or, you know, as we approach National Women's Week, and we're about to celebrate the 60th anniversary of women's suffrage in the Bahamas. So the first question is, are women using the vote to the benefit of women collectively? Are women using the vote to the benefit of women collectively? Second question, are women in politics advocating on behalf of women or to resolve women's issues? Does more women in politics, frontline or otherwise, translate into greater focus on women's needs and agendas? Should we mandate quotas for party candidates? That's when you say, look here, every party have to have at least 50% women candidates. Are women obligated to support women's issues or agendas in the legislature and the executive and those two branches of the House? Are women maximizing the resources and opportunities available to them, right? Can women and civil society resolve or partner with the state on some of their issues and needs? Can they resolve on their own or partner with the state with some of their issues and needs, as opposed to demanding from the state? Catherine, I shared with you an article from yesterday's Tribune on demand from women activists for greater accountability and participation from the state in ending and eradicating violence against women. And so, to the panel, are women using the vote to the benefit of women collectively?
I mean, I could write a thesis on every one of these questions. You know, that each one of these is worth like a 7-hour talk show. But I mean, what an amazing question. I was talking about this yesterday with my friend C.A. Nuri, but I went to watch a re-screening of the 2012 Womanish Ways, directed and written by Marion Bethel, that talks about the women's suffrage movement, and that initially the women involved, all the great names that we know about that you've listed here, Eugenia Lockhart, Georgiana Simonette, Mary Ingram, all of these ladies at Pushford initially said their motive was to help their husbands maintain their seats, so that it was always sort of like a humankind. It was like a humankind push. It wasn't just on behalf of women. It was that they could put the people that they believed in the seats, because at that time it was not imaginable that women would be able to hold these seats. And so it was not done as an attack on men, but it was a furthering of society that you say, if you recognize us as equal partners, as people that can stand by you, with you, and for you, and walk with you, we can all be more powerful as a nation, as a pre-independence country. And this was a nonpartisan movement in its beginning.
I know, pause right. Yeah. I was just going to say, because when you said that, it resonated, right? Because look here, if I'm your wife, right, and I could get put out the house the same way you could get put out the house for non-payment of the mortgage, then we in this together, right? If I could get lock up the same way you could get lock up in the street or in our home, then we got to be in this together, right?
I mean, even if you want to take it biblically and say, as a helpmate, women say, this is the best way in which we could help you. And I was given chills when we had when we were talking about Dame Doris Johnson's address to Parliament, when she basically sternly reminded them and demanded, but with not without respect or without equanimity, demanded that women be given this right to vote. A lot of these questions say, should women, will they? Yes, we should, and yes, we will. And do we? I don't think we do it this time.
We have twice now, where we stand, where we constitutionally
have inequality in this country for women. We have do not have the same constitutional rights as men. That is with the marriage, the fact that, that inheritance laws are a lot better now. They're not perfect, but they're a lot better than they used to be. When it comes to marriage, we all know that if you're a Bahamian woman that marries a foreign man and misses and has your baby in Florida, you will not be allowed to pass on citizenship. We have an ongoing conversation happening about the amendments to the marital rape bill in which that women that are within marriage cannot say that they were raped, that they had suffered that form of violence. And unmarried women can do so. This is a, something that the UN has told us decades past that we needed to sort out in order to stand proudly on a world stage and say that we support equal rights for humans. When we signed on to the CEDAW conventions, we basically had to say that these are the things that we felt that were not in accordance to that.
Mm-hmm. Two things. All of that progress we've made, right, say since 73, they all the things you're talking about, they things that government did. Like the government signed on the CEDAW, right? Have we, the women, and the, we, the descendants of those women, the five, the six, when Doris joined them and sort of adopted the cause, right? Formed the caucus. They formed the caucus and adopted the cause that had already been set out. How, are we, women and men, the descendants of these women, and the men that joined them and supported them, are we honoring, right, their sacrifice? Are we, do we have an obligation, right? And are we living up to that which they enabled us to do, right? Like they enabled us to vote. Are we living up to the gift, right? Because it wasn't, we had to fight for it, right? We had to demand it. We say it's our right, but are we living up to it? Are we achieving what it is that they intended to be achieved? Are we putting in enough effort, and do we take it seriously?
And I will say that it wasn't full government going on. It was the indomitable Janet Boswick, who in her South America convention signed the document and then came home and was happy that she had a prime minister that backed her signing of it because she did not go with pre-permission to do so. So that was another brave move by a woman to get us onto CEDAW. But are we doing our due diligence? Are we honoring the work of these fearless women that went before us? No. No, we are not. And the question, that, I mean, on Sunday night, the question was posed like why is this happening? Why are we not? Are we just too comfortable? I mentioned this again on the other show yesterday, but I said one of the male callers had called in, and I really appreciate his gift. He said, "You sound angry. You sound like you want to take men down. You sound like you got some issues." And I said, "I hope so because I'm happily married. I come from a I have comfort. I have my kids in school. We're doing okay. If I am not angry on behalf of the women that can't be angry because they're subjugated, they're humiliated, they're at risk, they could be the victims of violence on any given day. If the women that are strong and outspoken are not angry, then we are not doing our jobs for our other women and our other human beings. Because the definition of a healthy culture is that neither sex is safe and protected while the other is left out. Is that we as a whole society protect and defend each other. I hear a lot of men saying, we're fearful of what will happen if laws change.
If I could step in for a second, you know, the point that you made that if you're not angry, right, then you know perhaps you're not aware. I'm going to say, for the women that have the ability to see, right, like I am in a particular class, I make a salary that affords me enough free time to think about things, and even enough free time to advocate for things, even enough free time to risk my standing in the community to advocate for controversial
free
things.
Mind on free time
it's
only.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. If I have the time to do that, I'm privileged. But if I don't realize, if I'm not angry, perhaps it's that I don't realize that even an upper class, an upper middle class woman, a well-educated woman right? A rich woman, because you could be upper middle class and still not rich, right? That I am also susceptible to these forms of violence, right? Like if I'm not angry.
As are men, because that always comes up. Like, what about men? Right. As are men.
One of the things we don't talk about in this town is that rich women are also susceptible to domestic violence and also experience domestic violence, right?
Absolutely.
And I've got two Greek Bahamian women in the room with me. Women who are white or European descent. Women
or behind
who are
gates.
Greek
yeah.
descent, right? Women who are super wealthy and living in the gated community. Yes, Cecil, you can make a distinction with Greek and white and European. They could tell you why, because that's the thing.
And you could divide that past times 100 right? with the distinctions but that could be made, Aaron. So
what we don't talk about are the women with power that also experience violence and either don't know what to do about it or cannot find a resolution to it, right? Like, I know of women who essentially, they got plenty of money. Like, I look at them and say, oh, you rich. They got fancy cars. And then later on you learn, but they were in an abusive relationship for the vast majority of
violence
their lives.
Does not discriminate. And as you say, in the 16 days of violence, there's a conversation we'll have, but it does not discriminate. As you said, that's a good point. This is not just happening to a certain, and I don't want to say lesser in any way in human or Christian equality, but people will say, well, that happens in certain areas because by social mandate, there's less of a healthy nuclear family there. No, it does not discriminate. Violence doesn't, and neither does injustice. And I think that there is no progress we can make as a country that we do not make side by side and together. This is not leaving men aside. And as I was saying, a lot of men talk about the fear of what could be happened if this law is weaponized, like any law could be weaponized, and why protections must come along with these amendments to protect those which it can be weaponized against. Men should not be abused physically or raped with in marriage either, but you should never let what makes you afraid prevent you from doing the right thing.
Absolutely. Now, Mr. Newry.
We need to go on the break. We haven't taken our first break yet. This is On the Clock with Aaron Green. We're going to come back and be more aggressive for that conversation, right? Because we need to challenge these women here in terms of women equality, and I'd say we're not doing that.
No, I got some more questions. We're going to get to them right now.
Good.
Plus, I don't know what's going to happen when you take over the hour. Your man is just do whatever you want.
But if it's a man show, it could be a mashup. Because I say that if
it's man down, if
these women are equal to me, then they're supposed to be able to take some chafing.
Well, there we go, ladies.
So we can chafe them up.
Before the 11 o'clock hour, a lot of chafing going on.
We got a name for that.
No, that's good.
Absolutely, you guys.
Come here, let me spray you.
Okay,
stay tuned on the clock, Guardian Radio AM. We'll be right back.
The secret is out. Thursdays have gone TCL at Alive. Thursday, November 17th and November 24th, you can save big on select TCL devices. Shop early for the holidays and get the best deals on devices starting as low as $19. Alive has doorbuster specials, TCL savings, and more. So stop, drop, and run to your nearest Alive location closest to you. We are Alive. Terms and conditions apply.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
BWF Christmas Palace is now open. Enjoy a Bahamian Christmas experience with BWF. Check out our wide selection and save big with up to 50% off Black Friday Super Savings, Doorbuster Specials, and Tent Sale. Friday, November the 25th from 7 a.m. until 6 p.m. and Saturday, 8 a.m. until 6 p.m. Save big on Christmas supplies, toys, junk and craft supplies, houseware supplies, kitchen and outdoor, cooking supplies, barbecue grills, lawn and garden supplies, automotive supplies and accessories, appliance combo specials, and a whole lot more. BWF, we're more than just our name. Located number 13 Bolton Street, code 394-0004-6. Like us on Facebook.
Here we go. J.S. Johnson Insurance agents are the best. Reliable service, we've been on the scene, protecting since 1919. J.S.
Remember when Zoom was just a sound effect? When your living room wasn't your gym? When a cough didn't scare people away? That was the good old days. And thankfully, they are coming back. As things return to normal, remember it is essential to be fully immunized against all vaccine-preventable diseases like COVID-19, diphtheria, tetanus, measles, and influenza. This message is brought to you by PAHO WHO, the Ministry of Health and Wellness, the Caribbean Development Bank, the Government of Canada, and the United States of America.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM as we close out the on-the-clock hour of Man Down Wednesday. Ladies, we have not done enough mashing up of man. Cecil, you get away. You get away.
I gotta hold you right there, Aaron, because that's where women get the bad rap. Why we always gotta be mashing up men? Right?
No, because they come to mash me up. Look at that one sitting in the waiting room. They come tag team. They say, look here, we can't both go in this room one time. We got to stagger it. But I agree with you, right? This idea that men and women hate each other, that women are trying to bash men, that men are trying to dominate and control.
That any argument
women.
That is pro-woman is anti-man as an assumption
incorrect.
Is wrong. It is pro-human. If you're pro-woman, you're pro-human. It doesn't mean that it's an expensive man. It's that we see a healthy society as a whole. That when I speak for women's rights, it's because I want my son to have his wife protected also so he doesn't have to die protecting her. It is a whole society that we're going for.
All right. So let's get back to some of these questions. Can Bahamian women find common ground and work together across a myriad of social, religious, and political positions and ideologies? Because guess what? This LGBT elephant in the room?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, boy. A lot of women are having great difficulties finding common ground in the advocacy discussion.
I find that, and Ali, I don't want to keep cutting you off. Do you want to have anything you want to say in before I go?
Take it away.
I find that interesting because I think that women are the biggest enemies to women. That when we have, as far as taking each other down, not supporting each other, not being there for each other, that women are more like, we voted against the referendum to give ourselves constitutional equality twice. How does that make sense? How do we not ashamed when we see the suffragettes that marched before us, when we think of them in their memory and in their reality?
I don't think the failure was voting no twice. I think the failure was refusing to demand of the political class, right? Mm-hmm. To demand that you stop using
mm-hmm.
and exercises like this for your own political advantage. Did you stop compromising exercises like these for political expediency?
And also the fact that this is not an opinion poll. What is right is right. What should be constitutional equality should not be what we feel, what we think, what our opinion is. Across the board, we need to make things so, and then we can talk to people about how they feel. Now, when you say, can women get together across these party lines, and watching again this documentary, that the coming together of women is the only way we will make progress. And groups like Women's United, which is relatively newly formed, has said we need to, in a nonpartisan way, march together so that march, metaphorically, we don't always have have to be clogging up the road, although marches can be powerful in many ways, march together towards these changes by saying that we will unite in order to demand that which is necessary. And when the suffrage movement founded, it was nonpartisan. It was not PLP yet, okay? It was formed by it was a nonpartisan movement in which women took specific art of war strategies towards making a change, which was, it took 11 years to make any real progress, which is they're doing what people said, doing what women do best, which is nagging and nagging and nagging together, but not at expense of each other, saying, we together need to hold hands and push forward to do this. And a lot of the men will say, if you do that, women, we will stand and support with you, but you need to stop fighting each other in order to do so. So any women that listen, yes, Natalie wants to, I really want you to touch on the privilege to speak. Not everyone has the privilege. Not the same as the right. Not the same as the right to speak. Everyone has the right to speak. Not everyone has the opportunity to speak.
I want to ask you this, because I don't think the question is specific, you know, for Natalie, right? Do organizations like Women United see the need to unite across the boundaries, like the class boundary?
Absolutely.
Are organizations like Women United too focused on a political advocacy, right, than actually supporting women?
First of all,
policy-wise,
absolutely, Women's United, and it's not the only female group. There's other groups that have, Equality Bahamas, Rise Bahamas. Other groups have had these same beliefs that in a nonpartisan way, we need to work together in order to get these things done.
But I don't think you could lump Equality Bahamas and Rise Bahamas in the same basket as organizations like Women United and Zonta. And so the question is, are organizations like Women United and Zonta prepared to unite across class boundaries, right? And it doesn't just mean, look, anybody could, it doesn't mean anybody could join my organization, right? It doesn't just mean, oh no, we have programs for those constituencies. What I mean is, are they prepared to advocate in a way that disrupts the policies and systems that are oppressing
the people that
lower class women? Right, and those women are experiencing things that upper class and women and upper working class women are not experiencing at all.
And I do think I actually do want Natalie to comment on the privilege to speak. As I said, it's not the same as the right to speak. Anyone has the right to speak. But what really touched me yesterday talking to C.A. Nuri about his mother, and I said, "Describe your mother," and he said, "She was hardworking. She was hardworking." And I was like, "Where are the other adjectives as a woman?" And I'm like, as a hardworking mother who I think held multiple jobs in a time when the exhaustion of womanhood, and I will say motherhood, but not every woman is a mother, is it can be dehumanizing. Take the humor, the Jesus, the mind, the introspection, the reflection out of you. Not everyone has the luxury of participating in meetings on a Sunday night. You don't have the freedom. You have to be home with your kids or working. And so the fact that the women that can need to make sure that we actively engage and talk to the women that are unable to in any way, mentally, physically, or practically unable to be there. But that we do have to consciously tap into the needs of all throughout the classes. And you said across the religious, economic, sexual preferences that we have, the equality of all must be equality for all for it to mean anything. But any woman showing up to a meeting, and you don't want to be just the women in the room. My mom said the problem is a lot of these meetings will have the same women like preaching to the choir. We all know it. We all believe it. So who are we talking to? We need to have changes made, like not just on our knees in prayer, but on our feet in action. And I think that talking about female scientists, one of my favorite Jane Goodall quote is, what you do makes a difference. You have to decide what difference you make. That also means that in being inactive, you make a difference. And so that those have the freedom to be active must do so. Natalie, please comment.
Well, ladies. We had that 11 o'clock hour. I'm trying to get my producer to play this music now. Oh. We got to go to a break. We had the end of the on-the-clock hour. We got to play the news. And see, this is why these BDM say women just won't be in charge. I see what you're talking about, Cecil. I don't have a wife. I wasn't sure.
I'm enjoying it.
I mean, you have a wife, but don't tell the law.
We may talk about that on the next break. How you have a wife and nobody knows.
Don't tell the law. No. Anyway, you've been on the clock now. We go into Guardian Radio AM, and our guest co-host, who should have been with us from the first hour, but he was scared, coming to join us, Mr. Ian Munnings. Y'all stay tuned. We're going to be right back.
and drink.
Oh yeah.
I should have listened to mommy.
Oh yeah.
I should have listened to papi.
Oh yeah.
Mind this guy, have oh, the yeah. heart to take my ring.
Oh yeah.
I nearly married the golden. I nearly married the golden.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.